This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra. And this evening we have with us the Ambassador of Ireland to Malaysia, fresh from celebrating the always fun St. Patrick's Day this past Tuesday. And here to speak about the equally interesting bits like the economy and bilateral ties with Malaysia, the Ambassador of Ireland to Malaysia, His Excellency Declan Kelly. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much indeed. I'm delighted to be here with you.
And of course, tell us a little bit more about your relationship here and your history with Malaysia. How long have you been the ambassador for now?
I was appointed ambassador in October 2010, so just over 4.5 years. And I will be leaving Malaysia on the 1st of June when I retire, in fact, from the Irish Public Service.
Wow, so soon.
There you are. I must say I'm delighted to hear that.
Well, you've been around. I know that that doesn't come across, but you've been around. You were in Canada before this, am I correct?
Yeah, I was ambassador to Canada before this, and I also covered Jamaica and the Bahamas from Ottawa. And before that, I was ambassador to Australia based in Canberra, but I also covered New Zealand and Fiji. And before that, I'm a civil servant. Irish ambassadors are all public servants. And at one stage, I was the Consul General in California. I've also been Director of Press and Information at the Foreign Ministry. And an earlier part of my career, I was Private Secretary to the Irish Prime Minister.
Right. So would this be your first Southeast Asian posting?
Absolutely. And when I came here first, I was appointed ambassador to both Malaysia and Thailand. I covered Thailand, but last September we opened a new embassy in Bangkok, so I just have Malaysia now.
All right.
And so clearly Malaysia is your favourite at this
absolutely,
point.
Absolutely, without any doubt.
How's it been? I mean, it must be very, very different a posting for you.
It's been very different, but you know, I'm absolutely delighted that before I retired, I had a posting in Southeast Asia. Clearly, we all know about the talk about this being the Asian century and the 21st century, etc. And that is true to some extent, although don't write off the United States and Europe just yet. But there is a tremendous sense of expectation and vibrancy here in Asia, and I've really enjoyed it. And the wonderful thing about KL too is that it's such an easy jumping off point. So I've had very nice trips to Vietnam. This is just for short breaks. Over to Cambodia, to Angkor Wat, of course, down to Singapore, into Bangkok, of course, when I covered there, but also over to Yangon. So I have to say it's a fantastic location, KL, for doing all of that.
And what has Malaysia and Ireland's history been historically, in a very sort of brief summary, I guess?
Okay, so obviously before your independence, a lot of the administrators here from the British would have had Irish connections. So the most tangible link in many ways was on education. So a lot of our educators, LaSalle brothers and Assunta nuns, of whom Sister Enda and Brother Felix here in KL are still alive, hale and hearty, thank goodness. So education has been a very strong point. So some of your very senior administrators would have basically gone to schools where they were taught by Irish people. So that is a very solid connection. And out of that then grew the link with the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland, which is located in Penang. And that's been over 70 years, these educational connections. So that's a really strong link. And then transfer that into the modern era, then we have a fairly vibrant two-way trading. It's worth over about £1.2 billion between commercial and service exports and imports. And there are Irish companies here employ about 2,500 people.
Wow.
And agribusiness, high tech and medical device companies. And also there are smaller software operations and that. So we've quite decent connections with Malaysia. And then we have about 1,700 Malaysian students in Ireland, most of them doing medicine and ACCA, but also broadening out beyond that.
Of course, the soft power, when you're talking about sort of cultural ties, I mean, Guinness is everywhere in this country.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
But Ezra would.
Well, actually, I should just tell you that the Irish Times, which is a very reputable newspaper in Ireland, an excellent newspaper, in fact, they organised a worldwide competition for the best Irish bar, and they had 1,500 entries. And a pub here in KL, Healy Max in Jalan P. Ramlee, was voted in the top 10.
Wow.
So that's quite an achievement for a bar here in Malaysia. And so, yeah, absolutely, that is a connection. But, you know, I think our connections are deeper than that in the sense that, you know, what I pick up from people who've been to Ireland, and many Malaysians go there on holidays, and in fact, just on that point, if I could put a plug in with the Euro Week There never was a better time to go to Ireland on vacation. Tremendous deals are available. But what really comes, when people come back, what they say to me is that, you know, Ambassador, and I had this when I was in Australia and Canada as well, what we really loved about your country was the people. A tremendous sense of friendship, easygoing, and that is what we are noted for. Irish people are friendly. They're inquisitive, and in that way, they remind me very much of Malaysian people.
Aww.
Malaysians are inquisitive, and I like that. I like people to ask questions. I like to ask questions about you, your culture, your history, and Irish people are very like that. And we will never leave you sitting on a bar on your own without nobody talking to you.
There you go. We're going to be continuing asking Declan Kelly a whole lot of questions about Ireland and Malaysia. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. It's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra. In the studio with us is Declan Kelly, Ireland's ambassador to Malaysia. Of course, for those of us who have never experienced Ireland, what would a typical Irish experience be?
Well, okay, well, most people who come to Ireland, we're noted for our scenery. It's a very beautiful
very
country.
Scenic,
it's a very, very scenic, very beautiful country. But we also have a tremendous culture. So, for example, Trinity College in Dublin was founded in 1603. It has a stunning library, absolutely amazing library. And it's also the repository of the Book of Kells, which is a book written by Irish monks nearly 1,000 years ago. And then, of course, Dublin and Ireland is famous for its writers. So there's the Dublin Writers Museum. You can go on a trail around Dublin of the bars where James Joyce wrote many of his books or got inspiration for them. So we can combine a holiday that has beautiful scenery but also history. If you're a golfer, it's Seventh Heaven, home of Rory McIlroy, Graham McDowell, Patrick Harrington. We've over 400 golf courses. If you like horse racing, it's absolutely famous for horse racing, wonderful fishing. And a very interesting thing has happened in the last couple of years. Along the west coast of Ireland, which abuts onto the Atlantic, it's absolutely stunningly beautiful part. And somebody in our tourist office got this smart idea of basically from the coast of Donegal down to Cork and entitling this the Wild Atlantic Way, okay? Because wild the Atlantic comes in. And we didn't do anything. It's been there for billions of years, but it just gave it this title. And they've had an incredible response to this. And basically, it's they're putting it down to it's born on the internet and Twitter culture because young people are going on the Wild Atlantic Way. They're cycling bikes, they're walking, and they're Twittering and tweeting and doing all these wonderful things saying, hey, I've just found this great little restaurant. I just found this great little thing. So basically, for about 2 million euro, sticking up a few signs, calling it the Wild Atlantic Way, this whole area, which has been there forever and beautiful and visited, is now seen as a unit. And it has become a hip thing to do it and discover something different on the Wild Atlantic Way. So it's a very interesting concept, I'm sure, for anybody else in tourist industries around the world listening. You don't have to spend big bucks to get a good response.
Right. No, I certainly like the idea of that organic tourism, I suppose, you know, it's growing on its own. So you've mentioned all these famous things to do, I suppose, in Ireland. When you have personal guests, if you were to take them off the beaten track, where would you take them?
Well, you know, the thing about that, Caroline, is it depends on what they're into. And people, you know, myself and my wife have hosted people for many years. Being a Dubliner, I would bring them around Dublin and show them some of the stunning buildings in Dublin. For example, we have magnificent Dublin Castle, which is part of our legacy, St. Patrick's Cathedral, Christchurch Cathedral, down around the Liffey. I would take them out to the beaches quite close near Dublin. And also, if they were walkers, I'd take them up into the Dublin Mountains, where you can, from the centre of the city, within about an hour, you can be up into the mountains, or in an hour, you can be towards the beach. So, you know, if you're a walker, beautiful. You like scenery? Beautiful. We also have some of the most stunning and beautiful landscape gardens in the world, botanical gardens. Absolutely fantastic. So there you are. If you're a walker off the beaten track, we can take you lots of places. If you want to see these buildings all associated with our history, we have the wonderful Marsh's Library, which is hundreds of years old and has books going back to the time of Jonathan Swift. So listen, it goes on and on. We surely find something for your taste.
Who needs to spend money on tourism advertising when you've got you?
Well, that's what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, you do it well.
Oh, you were mentioning earlier about Twitter and Facebook, and I've been made to understand that in Ireland there's actually sort of a booming sense of, in terms of technology and startups. And tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay, well, look, the docks in Dublin are now being referred to as the Silicon Docks, right? So all of the born on the internet companies such as Google. Google employs about 2,500 people in Dublin. And in the last 3 years, they've bought three huge buildings. But also Facebook, LinkedIn, Dropbox, all of these companies are all in Ireland, all there. And we also have the older companies like Intel have been in Ireland since 1989. They employ 4,500 people. Apple employed 2,500 people. And in fact, just 2 weeks ago, they announced an investment of 850 million in a new data center, 850 million euro, nearly 4 billion ringgit. So we have basically all the top internet companies with the top high-tech companies, pharmaceutical companies, and they're all attracted to Dublin.
And is that reflective of a growth in interest or the industry itself is growing?
No, we've had a long tradition. People have missed this in many ways. We have over 3,000 companies in Ireland, and over 1,000 of the top MNCs in the world have their European headquarters. And the reason is that because we're in the EU, if you locate your company in Ireland, you have a market of 500 million. To export to.
Well, that's handy.
But most importantly, we also have the intelligence and the technology and the kids who are able to be attracted by all of these companies. None of them are philanthropists. They're there because they know they can get the right people for the jobs.
It's ease of doing business policies. Yeah,
exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah.
We're going to be continuing our discussion with Declan Kelly, Ambassador of Ireland to Malaysia. Stay tuned to the evening edition, BFM 89.9. Good evening, you're with Caroline and Ezra, and we're speaking to Declan Kelly, Ireland's ambassador to Malaysia. We were speaking earlier just about all of these huge internet tech companies, like Google, Intel and Facebook and LinkedIn, all having a huge presence over there.
Yeah, perhaps you could elaborate on Ireland's pro-business stance. What makes it so attractive? I suppose, you know, attracting FDI would be, you know, one of the things most countries want to go for. Everybody wants to be vibrant in that industry. Ireland's done it very well.
Okay, well, Caroline, the basis of all of this is go back to 1973 when we joined the then European Economic Community, now the European Union, because we only have 4.5 million people. But if you locate your plant in Ireland, you can export into a market of 500 million. And that is duty-free. So that's the huge attraction. We then put forward a tax rate of 12.5%. That is guaranteed by government and opposition. So if you come into the country as a business investor, the government will meet you, that's fine, but we will then bring you over to meet the opposition, and they will guarantee that, and that's the way it's always been, because what we need is employment. The other thing we did is we also retooled our universities about 30, 35 years ago to focus on graduates in the science and technology. And in fact, the OECD last year said that on a per capita basis, we have the highest number of science and tech graduates in the OECD. So we focused on that. We also set up institutes of technology, which was the name would suggest, are focused on training young people to be ready to adapt to the companies of the 21st century. So just to link back into Malaysia for a moment, several of these institutes of technology have been in Malaysia over the last 5 years and offering opportunities for diploma, say, type courses in Malaysia to be upgraded to degree courses focused on business. And the big thing that I've said to several of your Malaysian ministers and business people is that we have very close links between industry and the universities. Mm. The people, the top guys in Intel and Google and that, they're always in the universities. They're always in the institutes of technology. So we want to try and find out all the time, what do these people need? We don't want to be producing graduates that nobody needs. So we try and focus that as best we can. Listen, I'm not saying we're perfect, but we have refined this fairly well over the last 10 or 15 years, and it definitely is working for us.
I think so. There are quite a few things working for you. So ease of doing business, this is what we've been talking about. But, you know, just looking at the list, Ireland is very well on many, many fronts. So we're talking about civil liberties. It ranks very well on the report card, Freedom in the World, Civil Liberties Index of Economic Freedom, Worldwide Press Freedom Index Ranking, Global Peace Index, Democracy Index. Now, these are indexes cases that we like to talk about here in Malaysia. We always look at our scorecard and where we are on the list and, you know, what we can do to improve. Now, we don't have to get into that space in that, you know, you can tell us what do you do that's different? What does Ireland do that's different?
Well, look, I don't want to get into different because that implies whatever. But look, all I can tell you is what we do. We certainly have a very vibrant media in Ireland. I was the head of press for 4 years, and I got to tell you that I was private secretary to the Prime Minister. I've been ambassador in 3 countries. But the toughest job I ever had was when I was head of the press and information division, because journalists in Ireland ask tough questions and they ask probing questions. So we have a flourishing democracy, and you know, and that is basically the foundation. I mean, you know, you have these various pillars of democratic country, and a flourishing media has to be one of them. I'm sure at times the politicians wish back home it was less flourishing, because it can be tough going. But in the end of the day, that's the way forward. When I was private secretary to the Prime Minister, the late Dr. Gareth Fitzgerald, who was a lovely man, he died a few years ago in his 80s, but I was only in my 30s when I worked for him, and he used to always say, I remember asking him one night, you know, talking about democracy all over the world, and he used to joke that for the citizen, the best type of government was one that just had about 4 or 5 of a majority. And I said, why do you pick that? He said, because then they'd only be 3 or 4 heart attacks away from being the opposition. So, you know, the point he was making,
this,
I guess,
must have
was
been a late night discussion,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, well, what he was thinking about was saying that you know, the numbers are always, if they're tight, then at the end of the day, this was his perception. But it was an interesting insight into a man who was, he was an economic professor, he was a politician, he was a statistician and an economist, and he had sort of, we weren't talking about any country in particular. He was just sort of giving his views on, I think we were in a group of people, all of us young in our 30s and 40s, and we were saying to him, what is the kind of ideal democratic setup, would you say? So that's the idea he put forward anyway. I'm not advocating it for anybody, by the way.
It sounds like a political science course seminar that you're having with your
colleagues.
Well,
he was that kind of a man. He was a politician, but I used to always say to him that in his heart of hearts, he was still a lecturer, and he loved engaging young people and drawing people's opinions out, you know.
We'll be concluding our discussion with Declan Kelly, the Ambassador of Ireland to Malaysia, right after this. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. It's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra. In the studio with us is Declan Kelly, the Ambassador of Ireland to Malaysia. We've been speaking about a whole host of things. But Declan, how big is the Irish community right here in Malaysia, and historically how much has changed?
We people don't have to register with the Irish Embassy. It's voluntarily. It's a volunteer thing. So therefore, we don't have precise figures. But my guess after 4.5 years and speaking to my predecessors is we probably have in the region of 1,000 to 1,500 born in Ireland, people who were actually born in Ireland, living here. And then maybe you have sons and daughters. So it's not a very big number. It's not a very big number. But as I said to you, my mother used to say there are good goods in small parcels. And the Irish community here, I really take my hat off to them, both here and in Penang, and what they've been able to organise. And what I always say to them is, and I don't mean this in any kind of a light-hearted way, they have a tremendous sense of community. They really do. And Irish embassies are small. Some people think the ambassador has, you know, 20 people working for him and all that. We have a very small embassy, but I am able to call upon any of the Irish community, whether they be accountants, architects, doctors or whatever, and they will always willingly assist me. So Irish embassies traditionally work very closely with the community because we have a huge diaspora. Worldwide, there are some 70 million people of Irish ancestry, yeah. 40 million in the United States. 13% of the Australian population was born in Ireland. And in 1850, 50% of everybody in New South Wales was born in Ireland.
Wow.
In 1850. And in Canada, 13% of the population. And I can tell you that's true because I feel like I shook all their hands the time I was in Australia and Canada. And what was a very nice thing is that people would be dying to tell you about their ancestors. They came over in 1846 or whatever. And you know, that's a very nice thing for the Irish ambassador to hear, that people still want to make this connection. It's a very interesting thing in itself. People really want to know where they came from. And, you know,
And speaking of that sense of community, of course, St. Patrick's Day was this past Tuesday. And,
yes.
And it's the celebration is huge, even more so now than I could ever remember in the past 10, 15 years, at least in this part of the world.
Mm, it and has become very much bigger.
It's become very commercial as well.
Yeah.
And what should people know about St. Patrick's Day, just to sort of make sense of it all?
Well, basically, because we have such a large diaspora, Irish people, and I experienced this in my time in California and in Australia and Canada, they love to celebrate their heritage. They love to celebrate their heritage. Like at the St. Patrick's dinner dance here on Saturday night, there was beautiful Irish music being played. And let me tell you, beautiful Irish dancing. But three of the musicians were from Malaysia. They had no Irish connections. One of them was playing our version of the pipes, the bagpipes. It's called the Uilleann pipe because it's played under your elbow. Uilleann is the Gaelic word for elbow. And one was playing the flute. And so we love, you know, spreading our culture. I don't know where we got, people say, you know, you've heard about the Blarney Stone in Ireland, you kiss the That's Blarney right. Stone, but we have the gift of the gab. When I retire, I'm going to spend some time trying to figure out all of this. But Irish people are very good communicators. And we love to tell the story about Ireland. We're very proud of our country. And I guess even though we had a very tough history, and many, many countries have tough histories, because we have this huge diaspora, they just love and they're so proud of their history and of their country. And they love to celebrate it. As I say, I saw it in Sydney. I saw it in San Francisco. I saw it in Toronto. I saw it all over the place. And for the last 4 years, I've seen it here in KL and Penang. So, as I say, I really don't have the answer as to why, but the manifestation is they love to do it.
Right. Well, thank you very much for spending some time with us. Of course, you're leaving Malaysia in the next few months.
I am. I'm retiring on the 1st of June and I'm going back to Ireland and I'm looking forward to it. We have three children and we have six grandchildren. Ranging from 8 to 5, 2 3-year-olds, 1 2-year-old, and a 4-month-old. So I have to get back into the land of telling stories and wonderful things like that, and Dora the Explorer, etc., etc.
Well,
but I'm looking forward to that.
Considering your gift was the gab, just send me your resume. I'll see what I can do.
Oh, I absolutely want to do nothing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Declan Kelly, the Ambassador of Ireland to Malaysia. If you missed any part of this program, you can download the podcast at www.bfm.my. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.